You'd have to have a mind like Vorbis's to plan it. No army could cross the desert, but maybe a small army could get a quarter of the way and leave a cache of water, and another small army could use that cache to reach halfway, and another small army... It had taken months. A third of the men had died of heat and dehydration. Men were already dying before Brother Murdoch went to preach. You had to have a mind like Vorbis's to plan your retaliation before your attack. Vorbis sat upright in the tyrant's chair. It was approaching midnight. A collection of Ephebian citizens had been herded in front of him. "Well," he said, "we can now dispense with the peace treaty. Ephebi is now a diocese of Omnia. There will be a fleet here in a few days." He signalled to one of the guards. "Who wrote this?" A copy of De Chelonian Mobile was flung onto the marble floor. "If the philosopher who wrote this does not own up, the entirety of you will be put to the flame." There was a movement in the crowd, and Didactylus stumped out, his barren lantern held defiantly over his head. Brother was standing beside the throne. It was where he had been told to stand. He watched the philosopher pause for a moment, and then turn very slowly until he was directly facing Vorbis. "You are the perpetrator?"
"Indeed."
"You dare to declare that the world is flat and travels on the back of a giant turtle?"
"No."
"When every honest man knows that the world is a sphere?"
Baratha leant forward, heart pounding. "My lord, he said no."
"That's right," said Didactylus. "You deny it?"
"Let it be a sphere, no problem. And the sun can be another larger sphere. Would you like the moon to orbit the world or the sun?"
"But you wrote... You gave the turtle a name."
Didactylus shrugged. "Now I know better. Whoever heard of a turtle 10,000 miles long?"
"But your lies have already poisoned the world."
"Then I shall write another book. A full retraction. In fact, with your permission, Lord, I will retire to my barrel right away and start work. A universe of spheres. Balls spinning through space." "Yes, Lord, I will write you more balls than you can imagine." The old philosopher turned and very slowly walked towards the exit. Vorbis watched him go. Then he turned to the tyrant.
"So much for your...
gooey!"
The lantern sailed through the doorway and shattered against Vorbis's skull.
"Nevertheless, the turtle moves!"
Vorbis leapt to his feet. "I want him caught! Now!"
"And Baratha?"
"Yes, Lord?"
"You will take a party of men and you will burn the library."
Ern clambered across the shelves like a monkey, pulling books out of their racks and throwing them down. "I can carry about 20, but which 20?
"Always wanted to do that," murmured Didactylus happily. "Upholding truth in the face of tyranny. One man, unafraid. Damn good shot, considering." The library door shook to a thunderous knocking.
The hinges leapt out of the walls. The door thudded down. Soldiers scrambled over it, swords drawn.
"Ah, gentlemen."
"Leave him," said Brother, as he stepped over the door. "But I've got orders," said a corporal. "Are you deaf? If you are, the Quisition can cure that."
"You don't belong to the Quisition."
"No, but I know a man who does. You are to search the palace for books. Leave him to me." The corporal looked hesitantly from Baratha to his prisoners. "Very good, corporal. I will take over."
Sergeant Simony pushed his way forward.
"Go!"
"Yes, sergeant."
Simony cocked an ear as the soldiers marched away. Then he turned to Didactylus.
"The turtle moves. I am a friend."
"Why should we trust you?"
said Ern.
Simony dropped on one knee in front of Didactylus like a supplicant.
"Sir, I can save you. You have friends in unexpected places. I'll just kill this priest."
Baratha backed away.
"No, I can help too. That's why I came. Vorbis means to burn your library."
"What can you do?" sneered Ern.
"I can save it."
"What?
Put it on your back and run away?" sneered Simony.
"No, how many scrolls are there?"
"About 700, said Didactylus.
"How many of them are important?"
"Oh, maybe a couple of hundred. The rest is just vanity publishing."
"I may be able to take more than that. Is there a way out?"
There's tunnels all through the rock. What do you intend?
I don't believe this, said Erne. You're telling Omnians there's another way out.
I'm inclined to trust this person. He's got an honest face. Speaking philosophically, what is your plan, young man? Get the books and...
Oh, my God.
Something wrong?
Could someone fetch my tortoise?
Brother looked at a scroll full of maps. He shut his eyes. For a moment, the jagged outline glowed against the inside of his eyelids, and then he felt them settle into his mind. Erne unrolled another scroll, pictures of animals, drawings of plants, and lots of writing.
You can remember them just by looking, said Erne.
Yes.
The whole scroll?
Yes.
I don't believe you. Describe an ambiguous presumer.
Don't know.
So much for Mr. Memory.
He can't read, boy, that's not fair, said Didactylus.
All right, the fourth picture in the third scroll you saw.
A four-legged creature facing left, a large head similar to a cat's, there are six whiskers, the tail is stubby. He blinked.
That was 50 scrolls ago. He saw the whole scroll for a second or two.
Brother blinked again. He was conscious of a certain heaviness of mind, a feeling that if he turned his head sharply, then memory would slosh out of his ears.
I feel, a bit...
He awoke with the smell of the sea in his nostrils. He was in some sort of shed. Such light as managed to come through its one unglazed window was red and flickered. One end of the shed was open to the water. A few figures clustered around something there. Brother gently probed the contents of his memory. Everything seemed to be there, the library scrolls neatly arranged.
You're awake, then,
said the voice of Om.
Where are you?
Your soldier friend has got me in his pack.
Brother got to his feet and peered out of the window. The red light was coming from fires all over Ephebi, but there was one huge glow over the library.
Guerrilla activity, said Om. Even the slaves are fighting.
Then Brother heard a hiss from the other end of the shed, a metallic whirring noise, and Erne saying,
There, I told you, just a block in the tubes.
The group was clustered round a boat, but there was no mast. What there was a large copper-coloured ball in a wooden framework. There was an iron basket underneath it, in which someone had got a good fire going. And the ball was spinning in its frame in a cloud of steam.
I've seen that, Brother said. There was a drawing.
Yes, you're right, said Didactylus, illustrating the principle of reaction. I never asked Erne to build a big one. This is what comes of thinking with your hands.
Now he was closer. Brother could see that half a dozen very short oars had been joined together in a star-shaped pattern behind the copper globe and hung over the rear of the boat. Wooden cogwheels and a couple of endless belts filled the intervening space. As the globe spun, the paddles thrashed at the air.
How does it work?
Very simple, said Erne. The fire makes...
We haven't got time for this, said Simony.
Makes the water hot, and so it gets angry. So it rushes out of the globe through these four little nozzles to get away from the fire. The plumes of steam push the globe around, and the cogwheels and Legibus's screw mechanism transfer the motion to the paddles, which turn, pushing the boat through the water.
Simony prodded the mechanism with his sword. Have you thought of all the possibilities? On land, perhaps on some sort of cart?
Oh, no point in putting a boat on a cart.
Simony's eyes gleamed with the gleam of a man who had seen the future and found it covered with armour plating.
Where's the priest? Didactylus said.
I'm here.
You went out like a candle back there.
I'm better now.
Remembering the scrolls okay?
I think so.
Erne turned away from the boat, where he was feeding more wood into the brazier under the globe.
Can we all get on board?
Brother eased his way on a rough bench seat amidships. The air smelt of hot water.
Right.
Erne pulled a lever. The spinning paddles hit the water, there was a jerk, and the boat moved forward.
What's the name of this vessel? Said Didactylus.
It's a boat. A thing of the nature of things. It doesn't need a name.
The boat chugged out of the boathouse and into the dark harbour. The paddles churned.
No wind, no rowers, said Simony. Do you even begin to understand what you have here, Erne? The things you could do with this power. It could drag Omnia kicking and screaming into the centre of the fruit bat. The copper ball spun madly over the fire. It gleamed almost as brightly as Simony's eyes. Baratha tapped him on the shoulder. Can I have my tortoise? There's good eating on one of these things, Simony said, fishing out Om. There was no sound but the slosh of water against the unnamed boat's hull and the spinning of the philosophical engine. There's some exiles in Ankh, said Simony. Don't worry, you'll be safe there. Baratha lowered his voice to a whisper. What sort of place is Ankh? A city of a million souls, many of them occupying bodies, and a thousand religions. There's even a temple to the small gods. Not a bad place for a fresh start. With my brains and your... Well, with my brains, we should soon be in business again. Vorbis stirred the ashes with his foot. No bones. The soldiers stood silently. The fluffy grey flakes collapsed and blew a little way in the dawn breeze. And the wrong sort of ash. Be assured, I know that of which I speak. He wandered over to the charred trap door and prodded it with his toe. We followed the tunnel, said the sergeant. It comes out near the docks. They're not in the city. We have searched it fully, Lord. Then they left by sea. Let us get down to the docks. Erne prodded at the copper globe with a piece of wire while the unnamed boat wallowed in the waves. The nozzles are bunged up. When the water rushes out of the globe, it leaves salt behind. Why? Said Simony. Water likes to travel light. We'll be calmed. Can you do anything about it? Yes, wait for it to cool down, clean it out, and put some more water in it. But we're still in sight of the coast. You might be, said Didactylus. Baratha lay in the pointed end, looking down at the water. A small squid siphoned past, just under the surface. He wondered what it was, and knew it was the common bottle squid of the class Cephalopoda phylum Mollusca, and that it had an internal cartilaginous support instead of a skeleton. Simony and Erne were bent over the philosophical engine. Baratha stared at the globe. A sphere of radius R, which therefore had a volume V equals 4 stroke 3 pi RRR, and surface area A equals 4 pi RR minus. Oh, my God. Baratha sagged to his knees in the rocking boat. The books are leaking. I don't see how that can happen, said Didactylus. You didn't read them. You don't know what they mean. They know what they mean. What's the matter with him? Said Simony. He thinks he knows too much. Priests. Mad, the lot of them. Sit down, boy, said Didactylus. You're making the boat rock. We're overloaded as it is. We're ready to start again, Erne said. Just bail some water in here with your helmet, mister. And then we shall go again? Well, we can start getting up steam. He blew on the fire. 9/10 of Om dozed in his shell. The rest of him drifted like a fog in the real world of the gods. He thought,
we're a little boat. There's the whole of the ocean. She'll probably not even notice us.
Greetings, said the Queen of the Sea.
Ah,
I see you're still managing to exist, little tortoise.
Hanging in there?
There was a pause.
I expect, said Om guardedly, you are looking for your price.
This vessel and everyone in it. But your believer can be saved, as is the custom.
What good are they to you? I mean, they've done nothing to deserve it.
Deserve? They're human. What's deserve got to do with it?
Om had to concede this. He wasn't thinking like a god.
You've been relying on one human for too long, little god.
I know. Take the boat, then, if you must.
Om let himself retreat into the shell of his shell.
Baratha?
Yes?
Can you swim?
There, Erne said. Soon be on our way. We'd better be, said Simony. There's a ship out there.
Brother looked across the bay. A sleek Omnian ship was passing the lighthouse. It's moving fast, said Simony. I don't understand it. There's no wind. Erne looked round at the flat calm. There can't be wind there and not here.
I said, can you swim?
The voice was insistent in Brother's head. I don't know.
Do you think you can find out quickly?
Erne looked upwards. Clouds had massed over the unnamed boat. They were visibly spinning.
What do you call it, Erne began, when you've got a dead calm surrounded by winds?
Hurricane, said Didactylus. Lightning crackled between sky and sea. Erne yanked at the lever that lowered the screw into the water. Lightning struck a few yards away. Secondary lightning sparked off the spinning globe.
We're in a boat with a large copper ball in the middle of a body of salt water, said Didactylus. Thanks, Erne.
The sea surged up.
Jump into the water!
Om shouted.
Why?
A wave almost overturned the boat. Rain hissed on the surface of the sphere, sending up a scalding spray.
Jump overboard! Trust me!
Brother stood up, holding the sphere's framework to steady himself.
Sit down, said Erne. I'm just going out. I may be some time.
The boat rocked as he half-jumped, half-fell into the boiling sea. Lightning struck the sphere. As Baratha bobbed to the surface, he saw the globe glowing white-hot, and the unnamed boat, its screw almost out of the water, skimming away like a comet. It vanished in cloud and rain. A moment later, there was a muffled boom. Baratha raised his hand. Om broke the surface, blowing seawater out of his nostrils.
Hold me out of the water! Tortoises can't swim!
A wave submerged Baratha. For a moment the world was a dark green curtain ringing in his ears.
Om!
He shouted as he broke surface again.
Yes!
I don't think I can swim!
The Sea Queen moved deep below the storm-tossed waves. The little boat had been a tempting target, she thought. But here was a bigger one, full of people sailing right into the storm. The Sea Queen had the attention span of an onion bargee. The fin of God plunged from wave crest to wave trough, the gale tearing at its sails. The captain fought his way through waist-high water to the prow, where Vorbis stood clutching the rail.
Sir, we must reef sail! We can't outrun this!
Green fire crackled on the tops of the masts. Vorbis turned. The light was reflected in the pit of his eyes.
It is all for the glory of Om. Trust is our sail, and glory is our destination.
The captain had had enough.
The ocean floor is our destination.
Vorbis shrugged.
I did not say there would not be stops along the way.
Lightning struck the mainmast. There was a scream as a mass of torn sail and rigging crashed onto the deck. The captain half swam, half climbed up the ladder to the wheel, where the helmsman was a shadow in the spray.
We'll never make it alive!
Correct.
The hull hit a submerged rock and ripped open. Balks of timber splintered and fountained up into the whirling sky. And there was a sudden velvety silence. The captain found that he had acquired a recent memory. It involved water and a ringing in his ears and the sensation of cold fire in his lungs, but it was fading. He walked over to the rail, which was greyish and slightly transparent, and looked over the side.
We appear to have run out of sea.
Yes.
And land, too.
Yes.
The memory of Finn of God sailed on through the silence. The captain stared down. The crew was assembling on deck, looking up at him with anxious eyes. In front of the crew, the ship's rats had assembled. There was a tiny, robed shape in front of them. It said,
Squeak!
Seagulls never ventured this far along the desert coast. Their niche was filled by the scalby. The scalby looked like other birds after an oil slick. Scalbies ate things that made a vulture sick. Scalbies would eat vulture sick. One of them, on this bright new morning, came across a mound lying on the tide line and gave it a tentative jab with its beak. The mound groaned. The scalbee backed away hurriedly and turned its attention to a small domed rock beside the mound. The rock said,
"Bugger off, you evil sod."
The scalbee made a kind of running jump onto a pile of sun-bleached driftwood. Things were looking up. If this rock was alive, then eventually it would be dead. The great god Om staggered over to Baratha and butted him in the head.
"Rise and shine, lad. Hup, hup, hup. All ashore, who's going ashore?"
Baratha opened an eye. "What happened?"
"You're alive, is what happened."
Baratha pulled himself into a kneeling position. The beach was a barren hem where the land met the ocean. The air buzzed with unpleasant small insects. "Oh, God, is there any water to drink?"
"Shouldn't think so."
Baratha looked at the desert. Behind the driftwood, the dunes marched away. Which way is Omnia?"
"We don't want to go to Omnia."
Baratha picked the tortoise up. "I think it's this way."
"What do you want to go to Omnia for?"
"I don't, but I'm going anyway." It was still hot. The lifeless sea seemed to steam. Baratha trudged along in the vibrating haze. Even Om had stopped complaining. It was too hot. Here and there, fragments of wood rolled in the scum at the edge of the sea. Ahead, the air shimmered over the sand. In the middle of it was a dark blob. Baratha regarded it dispassionately as he approached. Closer to, it turned out to be Vorbis. The thought took a long time to seep through Baratha's mind. Vorbis. Not with a robe, all torn off. Just his singlet with the nails sewn in. Blood all over one leg, torn by rocks. Vorbis. Vorbis. On the high tide line, a scalbee gave a croak. "He's still alive."
"Pity."
"We should do something."
"Find a rock and stove his head in."
"We can't just leave him here." Baratha got his hand under the deacon and tried to lift him. To his dull surprise, Vorbis weighed almost nothing. The deacon's robe had concealed a body that was just skin stretched over bone. Baratha slung him over his shoulder.
"What are you going to do with him?"
"Take him to Omnia. People must know what he did."
"You're mad! You're going to carry him to Omnia?"
"Gonna try." The sun set fast. It was better travelling at night, with Vorbis over one shoulder and Om under one arm. At this time of year, Baratha knew things now. They were leaking into his head. The glow in the sky over there is the aurora coriolis, the hub lights. So keep the hub lights on the left and the sunset glow behind you. Did you ever go to Cori Celesti? Om, who had been nodding off in the cold, woke up with a start.
"What?"
"It's where the gods live."
"Oh, I could tell you stories."
"What?"
"Think they're so bloody elite."
"You didn't live up there, then?"
"No, got to be a thunder god or something. Got to have a whole parcel of worshippers to live on Knob Hill. I never did thundering. Bloody I've got a big hammer, blind Yo does all the thundering."
"You said there were hundreds of thunder gods."
"Yeah, and he's all of them. Rationalisation. A couple of tribes join up, they've both got thunder gods, right? The gods kind of run together."
"I still don't see how one god can be 100 thunder gods. They all look different."
"False noses."
"What?"
"And different voices. I happen to know Io's got 70 different hammers. Not common knowledge, that. And it's just the same with mother goddesses. There's only one of them. She's just got a lot of wigs, and it's amazing what you can do with a padded bra."
There was absolute silence in the desert. The stars were tiny, motionless rosettes. Baratha put Om down and laid Vorbis on the sand. Absolute silence. He heard Om say,
"People gotta believe in something. Might as well be gods. What else is there?"
Baratha laughed. "You know, I don't think I believe in anything anymore."
"Except me."
Oh, I know you exist. He felt Om relax a little. Tortoises I can believe in. They seem to have a lot of existence in one place. It's gods in general I'm having difficulty with. A green glow in the sky indicated that the light of dawn was chasing frantically after its son. Vorbis groaned. I don't know why he won't wake up. In the rapidly growing light, Baratha saw a rock island a little way off. Caves?
Snakes.
Poisonous snakes?
Guess.
The unnamed boat clipped along gently, the wind filling Urn's robe attached to a mast made out of bits of the sphere's framework bound together with Simony's sandal thongs.
I think I know what went wrong, said Urn. A mere overspeed problem.
Overspeed? We left the water, said Simony.
It needs some sort of governor device. I think I could do something with a pair of revolving balls.
It's funny you should say that, said Didactylus. When the sphere exploded, I distinctly felt my...
That bloody thing nearly killed us, said Simony.
A few flying fish zipped out of the waves, pursued by a dolphin.
Can't help feeling sorry for that brother.
Priests are expendable. Anyway, he was mad. I saw him whispering to that tortoise.
I wish we still had it. There's good eating on one of those things.
It wasn't much of a cave, just a deep hollow carved by the endless desert winds, but it was enough. Baratha knelt on the stony floor and raised the rock over his head. He had to do it. I'm sorry, he said, and brought the rock down. In its early morning torpor, the snake was too slow to dodge. The cracking noise was a sound that Baratha knew his conscience would replay to him over and over again.
Good,
said Om.
Now skin it and don't waste the juice.
Baratha smashed the rock on the cave wall to create a crude cutting edge and gingerly started dismembering the snake. The unnamed boat bobbed in a gully between the rocks. There was a low cliff beyond the beach.
I know this area, Simony said. We're a few miles from the village where a friend lives. All we have to do is wait till nightfall.
Why are you doing this? Said Urn. I mean, what's the point? Have you ever heard the country called Estanzia?
Omnia conquered it 15 years ago, said Didactylus.
That's right. My country. I was just a kid, but I won't forget, nor will others. There's a lot of people with a reason to hate the church.
I saw you standing close to Vorbis, said Urn. I thought you were protecting him.
Oh, I was. I don't want anyone to kill him before I do. The sun was riveted to the copper dome of the sky. Baratha dozed in the cave. In his own corner, Vorbis tossed and turned. Om sat waiting in the cave mouth. And they came. From under scraps of stone and from cracks in the rock. They fountained up from the sand. The air was filled with their voices, as faint as the whispering of gnats. It was hardly language at all. It was a mere modulation of desires and hungers.
Want,
Om replied.
Mine.
He was stronger. He had a believer. But they filled the sky like locusts.
Want. Mine.
The chittering became a whine.
You can have the other one,
said Om.
Heart shut in.
I know, but this one, mine!
The psychic shout echoed around the desert. The small gods fled. Except for one. It had not been swarming with the others. It had said nothing.
Who are you?
Said Om. The small god stirred. There was a city once. It talked as though every word had been winched from the pit of memory.
I remember there was a lake. I recall. I. And there were temples, such temples as you may dream of. Great pyramid temples that reached to the sky. Thousands were sacrificed to the greater glory.
Om felt sick. This was a small god who hadn't always been small.
And there were temples. Me. Temples. Great pyramid temples. Thousands sacrificed me to the greater glory. Me. Greater glory. Such glory. Temples. Great pyramids. Dream temples. Me. Sacrificed. Me.
dream.
You were there, God. Thousands were sacrificed. Can you hear me? Greater glory. Me. What was your name? Name.
A hot wind blew over the desert.
Who were you?
There was no answer.
That's what happens,
Om thought. Being a small god was bad, but how much worse to have been a god and to now be no more than a smoky bundle of memories blown back and forth across the sand. There were said to be oases in the desert, but they were never in the same place twice. The desert wasn't mappable. It ate mapmakers. So did the lions. Lions. Oh, dear. He had to find lions. Lions drank. Baratha awoke. His mouth tasted of snake. Om was butting him on the foot.
Come on.
Is there any water?
5 miles off.
How do you know?
I can sense it. Trust me. Come on, while there's some twilight. And don't forget Mr. Vorbis.
Vorbis stood up like a man asleep when Baratha helped him.
Bring him along. Oh, yes, good old Vorbis.
Simony and the two philosophers stood on the cliff top, looking across the parched farmlands of Omnia to the distant rock of the citadel.
Looks big, said Erne.
See the gleam, said Simony. Those are the doors.
Look massive.
I was wondering about the boat. Something like that could smash the doors, right?
You'd have to flood the valley.
I mean, if it was on wheels.
If I had a forge and half a dozen blacksmiths, no problem.
The sun was on the horizon when Baratha, his arm around Vorbis's shoulders, reached the next rock island. It was bigger than the one with the snake. There were even plants lodging in crevices in the rocks. There's water somewhere, said Baratha, and I can smell something rank. His foot kicked against something yellow-white, which bounced away among the rocks, making a noise like a sack full of coconuts.
What was that?
Definitely not a skull,
lied Om. There's bones everywhere. Baratha picked one up. He was, as he well knew, stupid, but people didn't gnaw their own bones after they died. Om?
There's water here, we need it, but there's probably one or two drawbacks.
What drawbacks?
Well, you know, lions.
There's lions here?
Only one? It won't take any notice of us. Once it's fed, they go to sleep.
After feeding. Brother looked round at Vorbis, who was slumped against a rock. You want to use him as bait?
He'll be dying for a good cause.
A good cause?
I like it.
There was a growl from the rock pile and the lion emerged slowly. Its mane was matted. Ancient scars crisscrossed its pelt. It dragged itself towards Baratha, back legs trailing uselessly. It's hurt.
Oh, good. And there's plenty of eating on one of those. A bit stringy, but...
The lion collapsed, its toast-racked chest heaving. A spear was protruding from its flank. Flies flew up in a swarm. We can't just leave it.
We can. It's a lion. You leave lions alone.
Baratha knelt down and grasped the spear haft. The lion grunted as he withdrew the head. Omnian. It must have met the soldiers when they were on the way to Ephebi. He tore a strip from his robe and tried to clean the wound.
We want to eat it, not cure it. What are you thinking of?
It wanted to be helped.
And soon it will want to be fed.
Baratha gazed at the rock pile. The boulders formed a maze of half-open tunnels and caves. By the smell, the lion had lived there for a long time and had quite often been ill.
What's so fascinating about a lion's den?
It's got steps down into it. Didactylus could feel the crowd. It filled the barn. How many are there?
Hundreds, said Erne. And, Master?
Yes?
There's even one or two priests and dozens of soldiers.
Don't worry, said Simony. They are turtle believers, just like you.
But I don't...
They're just waiting for someone to lead them. Didactylus turned his face to the crowd. He could feel the hot, hushed silence of their stares. There were no whispering voices here. Even the small gods kept away from abandoned temples, for the same reason that people kept away from graveyards. The only sound was the occasional plink of the water. Each drop took minutes. It was hypnotic. Baratha found himself staring at each developing drip.
How?
Said Om. Water seeps down after the rains. It lodges in the rocks. It dripped into a shallow pool in front of what looked like an altar. There were a few statues, all of them toppled.
I want to get out of here,
said Om. Why? There's water, and it's cool.
Because a god lived here. I can feel it. A great god. And now no one even knows his name. This place is a morgue. Now do you understand?
No.
Don't you fear death? You're a human.
Do you know what it's like being human?
Easy. Get born, do what you're told, die, forget.
Baratha stared at him.
Is something wrong?
Baratha shook his head and walked over to Vorbis. The deacon's body was present, but the whereabouts of his mind was probably not locatable on any normal atlas. It was just that suddenly Baratha felt so alone that even Vorbis was good company.
Why worry about him?
Om said.
In 100 years he'll be dead anyway. We'll all be dead.
What?
I said in 100 years' time we'll all be dead.
Baratha stared. Yes, we will, but here and now we are alive. He picked up Om. And we'll make it home, all of us.
It is written, is it?
It is said. Didactylus smiled. He'd spoken many times to crowds in Ephebi, but this crowd put him in mind of Baratha. He was talking in philosophy, but they were listening in gibberish. You can't believe in Great Atuin, he said. Great Atuin exists. There's no point in believing in things that exist. They just are. He sighed. What do you want to hear? The turtle moves. Empires grow and crumble, and the turtle moves. Gods come and go, and still the turtle moves. From the darkness came a voice. And that is really true? Didactylus shrugged. It's real. I don't know about truth. And I don't think the turtle gives a booger whether it's true or not, to tell you the truth. Simony pulled Ern to one side. This isn't what they came to hear. They don't want philosophy. They want a reason to move against the church, and he's muffed it. You can't inspire people with facts. They need a cause. They need a symbol. They left the temple just before sundown. The lion had crawled into the shade of some rocks.
It'll track us,
moaned Om.
They do that for miles and miles.
We'll survive. I walk with my god. And half an hour later, a black shadowy line on the silver moonlit desert, there were the tracks. The soldiers came this way. We just have to follow the tracks back. If we head where they've come from, we'll get where we're going. Baratha glanced at Vorbis. He was walking unaided now, provided that you turned him whenever you needed to change direction. And even Om had to admit that the tracks were some comfort. The sun was up. Already the rocks were warm to the touch.
Get some rest,
said Om.
I'll keep watch.
There were snakes and lizards on the rock islands. They were probably very nourishing, and everyone was, in its own way, a taste explosion. There was no more water. But there were plants, more or less. They looked like groups of stones, except where a few had put up a central flower spike that was a brilliant pink and purple in the dawn light. Where do they get water from?
Fossil seas.
Water that's turned to stone?
Nope. Water that sank down thousands of years ago, right down in the bedrock.
Baratha led Vorbis into the shade of a large boulder and gently pushed him down. Then he lay down too. The thirst wasn't too bad yet. Later on they might find a snake. He tried to sleep and heard Om's voice in his head.
Mine! Go away! No! Mine!
and there was another sound, a sort of gnat-like whining and promises in his head. They flashed past, faces talking to him, shapes taking him high above the world, visions of greatness. All this was his. He could do anything. All he had to do was believe. In me, in me, in me! An image formed in front of him. There, on a stone, was a roast pig surrounded by fruit, and a mug of beer so cold the air was frosting on the sides.
Mine!
Baratha blinked. The voices faded. So did the food. He blinked again.
They don't know what to offer you,
said Om's voice quietly.
So they try to offer you anything. Generally, they start with visions of food and carnal gratification.
They got as far as the food.
Good job I overcame them, then.
Baratha raised himself on his elbows. The shadows were long. How long were they trying?
All day, persistent devils, thick as flies.
Baratha learnt why, at sunset. He met St. Ungulant, the anchorite, friend of all small gods, everywhere.
Well, 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 said St. Ungulant. We don't get very many visitors up here, isn't that so, Angus?
He addressed the air beside him. Baratha was trying to keep his balance because the cartwheel rocked dangerously every time he moved. The wheel had been nailed flat on top of a slim pole. It was just wide enough for one person to lie uncomfortably. But St. Ungulant looked designed to lie uncomfortably. He was so thin that even skeletons would say, "Whew, isn't he thin?" There was a slightly smaller pole a few feet away, with an old-fashioned half-moon cut out on the door privy on it.
"I was thinking of adding another wheel over there. Angus says we ought to have a patio."
"He could barbecue on it,"
said Om inside Baratha's head. Said Baratha, "what religion are you a saint of exactly?"
"None, really. My parents named me Severian Thaddeus Ungulant, and then one day someone drew attention to the initials. After that, it all seemed rather inevitable."
The wheel rocked slightly. St. Ungulant's skin was almost blackened by the desert sun.
"I've had to pick up herming as I went along. I'm self-taught. You can't find a hermit to teach you herming."
"But there's Angus."
"My word, I'd have gone quite mad if it wasn't for Angus cheering me up."
Baratha smiled at the empty air.
"Actually, it's a pretty good life. The food and drink are extremely worthwhile."
Baratha had a feeling he knew what was coming next. "Beer cold enough?"
"Extremely frosty."
"And the roast pig?"
"All brown and crunchy round the edges."
"And mushrooms too,"
said Om. "Any mushrooms in these parts?" St. Ungulant nodded happily.
"After the annual rains, yes, red ones with yellow spots. The desert becomes really interesting after the mushroom season."
"Full of giant purple singing slugs? Exploding giraffes?"
"Yes, I think they're attracted by the mushrooms."
"You're catching on, kid,"
said Om. "And I expect sometimes you drink water."
"Odd, isn't it, when ice-cold beer is so readily available?"
"Where do you get it? The water?"
"You know the stone plants?
The ones with the big flowers?"
"If you cut open the fleshy parts of the leaves, there's up to half a pint. It tastes like wee-wee, mind you."
"I think we could put up with that," said Baratha through dry lips. He backed towards the rope ladder that was the saint's contact with the ground.
"Are you sure you won't stay? It's Wednesday. We get sucking pig plus chef's selection of sun-drenched, dew-fresh vegetables."
We have lots to do."
"Sweets from the trolley?"
St. Ungulant looked down sadly as Baratha helped Vorbis away across the wilderness.
"And afterwards there's mints? No?"
Soon the figures were mere dots on the sand. St. Ungulant smiled.
"All the more for us, eh, Angus?"
"Yes,"
said Angus. The fighting was over in Ephebi. It hadn't lasted long. There were too many narrow streets, too many ambushes, and Vorbis had gone. The tyrant spent his first day of freedom composing messages to the other small countries along the coast. It was time to do something about Omnia. Baratha sang. His voice echoed off the rocks. You could live in the desert, or at least survive. Getting back to Omnia could only be a matter of time. One more day. When the sun was starting to climb, they found shade again. There were bushes here, low-growing, spiky, every tiny leaf barricaded behind its crown of thorns. Om could eat. He crawled through the bushes, found a couple of leaves, and watched the sleepers. He saw Vorbis sit up, look around him in a slow, methodical way, pick up a stone, study it carefully, and then bring it down sharply on Baratha's head. Then he picked Baratha up, slung him across his shoulders, and set off towards Omnia. Om started to move forward as Vorbis disappeared round some rocks. Then he ducked into his shell as a shadow skimmed over the ground. It was a familiar shadow. A breeze stirred the sand, and Om thought he could hear the taunting, mocking voices of all the small gods. The first thing he saw was the light slanting through a window. Against the light was a pair of hands raised in the sign of the holy thorns.
"Brother Noomrod?"
The master of novices looked up.
"Baratha?"
"Yes?"
"Om be praised. How do you feel?"
His head ached. His back felt as though it was on fire.
"You were very badly sunburned, and that was a nasty knock on the head you had in the fall."
"What fall?"
"From the rocks in the desert. You were with the prophet. You walked with the prophet, one of my novices." "But I don't remember any prophet. There was just me and Vorbis?"
Noomrod was beaming.
"I was privileged to be in the place of lamentation when he arrived, covered in dust and leading a donkey. You were across the back."
"I don't remember a donkey."
"He'd picked it up at one of the farms. There was quite a crowd with him."
"Vorbis is the eighth prophet."
"Of course. He's declared a month of Jahadra and double penances. The Cenobiarch has gone off to the hermitage at Scant."
"How long since we came back?"
"Almost a week."
"A week?"
"And he left orders that you were to be brought to him as soon as you were fully conscious. He was very definite about that."